British Sky Broadcasting presents Funeral in Berlin, starring Michael Caine as Harry Palmer. Voiced by Neville Watchhurst on behalf of MCS Agency. Music by Conrad Elfers. Based on the novel Funeral in Berlin by Len Dayton. Traffic teems along a wide boulevard at the top of which stands a ruined church. Passengers spill out from the Kurfürstendamm underground station. Volkswagen Beetles tootle along past crowded cafe terraces. The whole city seems to be vibrant and affluent. A large gold-coloured sign reads Hotel Am Zoo. A triple jet of water shoots upwards in the centre of an ornamental pool set amid sleek, functional 60s architecture. A grim, prison-like building looms above networks of tank traps and barbed wire. A lookout tower rises above a sign for West Berlin. Another sign reads, "You are leaving the American sector." A deserted street stands enclosed on one side by a high wire fence. A knot of civilians climb steps up onto an observation platform on the western side. Grey uniformed soldiers on the eastern side observe them through binoculars. The vista on the other side of the dividing line is grim, lifeless, and utterly forbidding, a stark contrast to the relaxed and comfortable west. A drab block of brick buildings looms above a section of the dividing wall topped with razor wire. Every single window in the tall facade facing west has been meticulously bricked up. A soldier peers down through binoculars to where a group of people seems to be working near a small armored vehicle. The swathe of no man's land dividing the two parts of the city is a forlorn jumble of breeze blocks, wire, and metal brackets. Both in late middle age, trudge along an alleyway formed by a building and the dividing wall itself. Over the wall is an expanse of tank traps and wire. A lookout tower stands in the center. Under the beady gaze of East German guards, a group of men lay mines in the barren waste of no man's land. One of the group, a handsome young man in a cap, plants a mine and gazes across at a crane on the western side. He glances at his watch and then sprints away across the wasteland.
Hit them!
The young man has leapt into a heavy metal cement hod dangled over the wall by the crane and been fished out of East Berlin and swung dizzyingly over to freedom. Waving at the jubilant construction workers, the young man vaults out of the huge bucket, whereupon he is hastily escorted to a large black Mercedes, at the wheel of which sits a serious-faced middle-aged man. A copy of the Daily Mail lies on a table. It bears a photo of the handsome young man sitting at a piano. Headlines read, "Dramatic bucket snatch from East Berlin. Musician escapes to freedom." Next to the paper is a pair of trademark Harry Palmer square black-framed spectacles. A figure in striped pyjamas is preparing a pot of tea.
Who's that playing the piano with his elbows? Coffee, love. coffee.
The young woman, still seemingly half asleep, picks up the kettle and goes to the tap. She moves towards the bedside table, revealing that she has only the pyjama top on. She teeters slightly on her shapely legs. She picks up a packet of cigarettes and puts one between her lips.
That was a recording of Mozart's Concerto in A Major for piano and orchestra, played by Viktor Bajewski, the young East German virtuoso who made headlines yesterday with his daring escape over the Berlin Wall.
Escape? They probably paid him to leave. Hold on a minute. Oxford in Surrey, written in verse on a
postcard, which has a... Picking up his glasses, Harry Palmer returns to the phone.
Hello?
Round Robin calling Chaffinch.
Chaffinch? Are you receiving me?
What do you want, Chica?
Please observe security procedure.
On a Saturday morning, are you mad?
Bald Eagle wants to see you
urgently at his place.
Look, he's expecting you at 1200 hours.
Tell Ross, I'll be late.
Really work on the insubordinate bit, don't you?
You're useless in the kitchen. Why don't you go back to bed?
A scarlet Route Master bus heading for Putney pulls up to a stop. Harry hops nonchalantly off the rear platform and ambles along a wide residential street and through an ample gateway to a huge detached white stucco house. On the gravel drive stand a tiny yellow Mini and a huge black Bentley.
Shall I be long then, Mrs. Mead?
Mrs. Ross, my name's Palmer.
Oh, yes, yes, of course. My husband's expecting you.
Mrs. Ross leads Harry through the house and out into the huge garden.
Darling, you're Mr. Palmer.
Morning, sir.
Good afternoon, Palmer.
Darling, I'm taking the Bentley.
To the butcher?
Yes, Minnie's had a nervous breakdown.
Well, try not to get blood all over the coachwork.
How can you work for that dreadful man?
Loyalty.
Harry steps lightly down onto the path and saunters up to where the irascible Ross is standing wielding his secateurs. Harry waits impassively. He glances at the waist-high vegetation as Ross turns to him.
I like weeds.
Yes, they're easy to grow.
Not at all. You have to keep the flowers out, defend the strong against the weak. You know, a garden should be like a country lane, a place you can walk in. Not one of those things with flower beds laid out like a cemetery.
I agree. Why did you send for me?
The thistles.
I beg your pardon?
I've got a lot of thistles. They attract butterflies. You should see this place in the summertime.
Ross hands Harry a large photo.
Stock. Colonel Stock, KGB, Russian intelligence, Berlin sector. In charge of the wall, unofficially.
You've been working since your promotion?
Yes, sir. Well, I want to get on in life.
Yes. Colonel Stock is thinking of defecting.
Well, do we want him?
Yes, Palmer.
Where did you get this piece of dubious information from, sir?
Berlin. Johnny Vulcan.
Ah, yes. I'll deal with this first thing Monday morning.
Your plane leaves at 3:30 this afternoon.
Harry looks slightly crestfallen.
Halabavecho will give you a passport. He's at 62 Wallington Road.
Have you ever thought of it, sir?
What, Palmer?
Defecting. I have.
Harry arrives at a rundown townhouse divided now into flats. Hanging on the railings is a shabby sign reading Lost or Stolen Siamese Cat, answers to the name Confucius, J.B. Hallam, flat 2.
Have you found my cat?
No, you've won the pools.
Ah, Ross's little man. Was that meant to be a password or simply a joke? I didn't recognize you, dear boy, in that gear.
Hallam, wrapped in a Chinese silk dressing gown, admits Harry to the basement flat.
Have you a shilling?
Eh?
For the meter.
Oh, see.
I seem to have run out again. Thank you. I know I can pay you back. I've got a jar of coppers somewhere. Somewhere.
Oh, never mind, forget it. I came for the passport.
I know, dear boy. Have some tea.
I've got a plane to catch. You been back long?
Where from?
China.
Is that another joke?
Hallam laboriously moves a large potted plant and whisks a cloth cover from a chest in the corner.
Very hush-hush. I hope you appreciate this. One of my lads stayed on till 2 a.m. to get this ready for you.
Dorf?
What's wrong with that?
Edmund Dorf?
All the best Englishmen have foreign names. Much more convincing.
Oh, I'm sorry, I just don't feel like an Edmund Dorf.
Charming. What do you feel like?
Rock hunter. Can I be rock hunter?
No, you aren't the type. You'll take what you get.
All right. As long as it's not one of those useless Foreign Office forgeries.
I know what you mean, my dear boy. The chap at the FO does it with his feet. Have a cup of tea. Darjeeling.
No, thanks. I've got to go.
Give my love to Berlin. I was there with Monty in 45.
So that's why the Germans surrendered.
Hallam stands clutching his teapot effectively as Harry exits. A tree sways in the breeze by an airport runway, down onto which swoops a Pan Am propeller plane. A man in a mask looks out from a window of the terminal building as the plane taxis to a standstill. The man clocks Harry getting off the plane. Harry looks for his suitcase on the carousel.
In American, gibt die Ankunft ihrer Maschine 684 aus London über Frankfurt bekannt.
The man appears to be waiting for Harry as he presents his luggage at customs control.
Yes? That's mine, and this is mine.
Well, will you open this one, please?
Harry's expression hardens, but he has no choice. He lays the case flat and clicks the locks, opening it to reveal stacks of frilly satin female underwear.
They're samples, you see. They're all samples. I'm a salesman, you see.
Okay, then. Thank you.
The customs man waves the bumbling Harry through. The man in the Mac stands waiting.
Mr. Dorf?
Yes?
On behalf of the company, welcome to Berlin.
Oh.
May I help you?
Yes, please.
Did you have a pleasant flight?
Yes, thank you very much.
The two men emerge from the terminal building.
Harry Palmer, it's good to see you.
You too, you old crab.
They approach a vast, open-topped American car with fins.
Yours?
Yeah.
So this is what you did with your share of the plunder. A nice polish, but getting old, like you.
She's got a great engine.
How's yours?
I keep in shape.
A little cabbie who has been observing them climbs into his black car and follows the huge American saloon out of the car park. Out in the bustling street, the cab seems to shoot a red light in order to keep up.
By the way, Harry, I never had a chance to thank you for covering for me on that NAFI deal. How did it beat the rap?
I didn't. It was either jail or work for Ross. He thought that a crook of my caliber would be wasted inside.
He was right. Your idea was brilliant.
So brilliant, I'm still on suspended sentence.
The great car wallows through the outskirts and into the center of Berlin. The modest black cab is still following. The American car pulls into a space at the curb. The two men get out and enter a building. A metal plate by the doorway announces J. Vulcan & Co. Lingerie. The cab pulls alongside the American car for a moment and then drives off. Inside, a woman shows samples to a man in a hat.
Noch durchsichtiger als dieses gibt es nicht. Transparent.
Den trage ich im 250 Schritt, aber wie gesagt, noch durchsichtig.
Noch durchsichtiger, aber schauen Sie mal, das ist doch...
Ah, guten Tag, Herr Brandt.
Herr Brandt.
Harry is led by his old partner in crime into a glass-walled office.
Her Majesty's government seems to be doing good business.
If you're going to have a cover, it might as well be profitable.
I won't ask where the profits go.
It's only pocket money.
Yeah, I believe that about as much as I believe that crazy Colonel Stock story of yours.
He has as much intention of defecting as you have.
He convinced me.
Really?
You'll get a chance to make up your own mind. I've arranged for you to meet Stock. You're going to the east.
Harry's face remains deadpan. At an Allied checkpoint, a few people mill around. The American car cruises up and pulls to a halt.
Remember, you're Edmund Dorff.
How can I forget?
You have the address?
Yep. And my Luger pistol, and my cyanide pills, and my inflatable Batman suit.
59 Max Engelsplatz, 59.
Harry gets out of the car. It pulls away as he walks off towards the checkpoint. 2 uniformed military police stand in front of a sign reading Checkpoint Charlie. Harry passes through towards the eastern side. He stops and has a word with one of the guards. One of the American military policemen clocks a black cab pulling up briefly at the end of the street. At the wheel sits the same cabbie who followed Vulcan's car from the airport. He registers where Harry is heading and then drives off. Harry continues past the sign announcing that you are now leaving the American sector. A man gets out of a black Volkswagen Beetle under the gaze of an East German guard. Harry arrives at the barrier and presents his passport.
Ja, vielen Dank.
The guard waves Harry through. He approaches a pair of cab drivers.
Was Taxi ist frei?
Der erste Wagen.
Danke.
Bitte.
59 Marx Engelsplatz.
Harry climbs into the back of an antiquated Mercedes taxi, which pulls away past a soldier pacing up and down with a machine gun. Harry sits looking inscrutably out at the desolation of East Berlin, the shells of buildings set amid unkempt lawns. The cab speeds around a corner and stops in front of a vast, dilapidated building.
Wait here.
The huge windows of the building are covered with rusted corrugated iron. Harry notes the house number, 59. Harry looks up quizzically as his cab speeds away. He wanders around the corner into a vast colonnaded portico. He turns as a police car screeches to a halt. Harry looks on as several policemen run up, grab him, and bundle him into the back of the car. The police car, emitting a plume of thick grey exhaust, speeds along a cobbled street parallel to a river or canal. Harry, in the back of the car, sits next to a stony-faced guard. He meekly fishes out his passport and gestures to it.
Me, British. You, Tarzan.
Guards flank the entranceway to a grim grey building. The police car speeds along the street and swoops through into a courtyard within. The car stops. One guard gets out and covers Harry with a machine gun, while the other pushes him out of the rear of the car.
You're staying.
He is hustled towards an interior doorway. He is led down into a semi-lit basement. Harry is led amid a triangle of uniformed guards down a corridor which is oppressive despite its spaciousness. In a vaulted hallway, a figure kneels in the gloom, swabbing the tiled floor, looking up as they march through. Harry is pushed through a doorway, and the heavy door is slammed after him. In the darkness within, he feels his way around the walls. A light is turned on, revealing a man of Russian appearance.
Admit I scared you, English. I'm Colonel Stuck.
Good afternoon.
I'm sorry about arresting you. Have some tea. It was a simple device to avoid suspicion. As usual, there is no milk today.
And so Russian tea was invented.
Stock beams up at Harry as he sips his tea.
All right, Colonel Stock. I'm listening.
You are in a hurry. We must get to know each other, English, if we are going to trust each other.
Harry's snake eyes betray nothing. Stock stares at him, his own eyes narrowing.
I wish to defect, but there are conditions.
What do you want?
I want Colonel's pay for life.
Don't we all?
A house in the country.
Oh, how many bedrooms?
Oh, bedrooms do not matter, but I must have a big garden. I'm a peasant at heart, and I want to grow roses in my old age.
In England, roses are out. Weeds are in. Is that all?
That is all. I want comfort and security.
You've got all that in Russia now.
In Russia, there is no place for an old Bolshevik. In my job, I've made too many enemies.
Well, what about your family?
My wife died in a German air raid in 1941. My only son hasn't written to me in 3 years. What would you do in my position?
I'd stop telling lies for a start. You have no son and your wife is in Kiev with your daughter Katya. I know everything about you, Colonel Stock. From the size of your refrigerator to the cubic capacity of your mistress. You haven't brought me all this way just to tell me a sob story.
Let's stop quarreling, English. Do you play chess?
Yes, but I prefer a game with a better chance of cheating.
I like you, English. You're not as stupid as you look. I wanted to see how well you were trained.
Train hard, fight easy.
Ah, you quote Marshal Suvorov. Bravo! But my offer is perfectly serious. My wall has been penetrated too many times in the last year. And last week, when a piano player flew over in a bucket. That's too much.
You mean politically or musically?
I did not arrest you for a joke, English. I must go in soon.
I should have thought that of all people, you would know a way of crossing the wall.
My department is being investigated. I'm being watched. When the axe is falling, there is no use pleading not guilty. And for you, it is a propaganda victory. My name is worth the headline.
We get plenty of Russians. It's a pity you're not Chinese. Will you cooperate? Information?
Yes, but there are limits. I'm not a traitor. I'm still a good communist.
Stock picks up his own tea glass, nods to Harry, and takes a sip.
If you won't have me, I'll go to the Americans.
Why don't you go to the Americans? They have more money.
Who wants to live in America? They're just Russians in press trousers. Revolutionaries gone decadent.
All right. I'll make my report to London. I'll tell them that you talk well and lie badly.
One thing more.
Yes?
I must have a foolproof method of escape. Foolproof. Organized by a professional, like Otto Kreutzmann.
Kreutzmann?
Yes, he has organized all the most important escapes. He's responsible for my travels. Now let him get me out.
Good afternoon, Colonel.
I've instructed the guards to escort you back.
Harry lets himself out of Stock's office. Nighttime, the neon of West Berlin twinkles. A tall building bears the illuminated inscription, Berlin Hilton. Harry strolls into the cocktail lounge. He spots Johnny Vulcan in a corner flirting with a young woman. Harry approaches.
Worried about me?
Not much. Where have you been?
Playing chess.
Monica says it's Edmund Dorff who's English.
I like England.
England likes you.
She has a friend.
Several, I should think.
Bit of money.
Lambrow, please.
The wall doesn't seem to have hurt business at all.
They're doing all right.
You see the man there in a plaid jacket?
Sells escape stories to editors in the Middle West. The guy with a head in his hands imports Zeiss cameras from the East. They all make a great living out of the wall.
Which one's Kreutzmann?
Vulcan looks askance at Harry and heads out into a side room. Harry follows him.
Are you innocent or just stupid?
Stupid.
You don't use Kreutzmann's name in there.
All right. But can he get Colonel Stark out?
If anyone can.
I want to see him.
If something goes wrong, you'll end up in the canal.
Would you find him, please?
It'll take time.
Pulling on his Mac, Harry heads out, noting appreciatively the beautiful young woman on the phone whose coat slips from her shoulder as he looks.
Aber mein Schatz, lass das doch wirklich sein. Nein, ich hab das marvelhaft alleine. Nein, ich hab dir doch gesagt, es ist alles in Ordnung. Du hast dir überhaupt keine Sorgen zu machen. Ich sag dir, ruf mich bitte morgen Vormittag an und ich tue das Glück. Ja? Ruf mich an und ich sag dir Bescheid dann.
Prising his wistful gaze away from her, Harry goes out through the lobby door and towards the cab hailed for him by the concierge. As he gets in, the young woman runs up.
Hallo, sind Sie wahnsinnig? Das ist meine Taxi. Ich habe Ihnen extra gesagt, Sie möchten bitte warten. Können Sie vielleicht aussteigen? Ist mein Wagen.
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Oh, you're English. You just took my taxi. I ordered it. Ask him.
Is that all? Well, either you wait for the next taxi.
Mm-hmm.
Or I will. I'm in no hurry.
Thank you. Which way are you going?
To the Am Zoo.
Oh, the Kurfürsten Damm. It's on my way. I can drop you. Come on.
Thank you.
Harry gets into the rear of the cab with her. Sitting side by side, they glance and smile coyly at each other. Harry notices a bottle of beer protruding from her bag.
What's a beer for?
Oh, my hair. It's better. If you want body. You were at the press convention?
No, I'm in underwear.
Oh, kinky. I'm in the trade too. Like it?
She seductively opens her coat.
Looks very expensive.
Oh, it's murder. I've just been modeling it. Know anybody in Berlin?
No.
I'll take you to a party. My name is Samantha Steele. Some people call me Sam.
Edmund Dorff. Some people call me Edna.
The cab pulls up outside a grand-looking house. Samantha gets out, followed by Harry, who goes to pay the driver.
Miss Duncan.
He takes her bag for her and follows her up the path. She unlocks a front door and admits him into her spacious flat.
Where's the party?
Oh, that's later. Oh, don't mind the mess. I'm a terrible slob. That's one thing about living alone. You can be a slob.
Slob, yeah.
Fix a drink. I just want to get out of this creation. Take your coat off.
Harry grins knowingly and removes his coat.
The whiskey's by the bookcase.
She disappears through the sliding doors once more. Harry slings his coat on a chair and moves across to the side unit on which sit glasses and the whiskey. He pours two generous measures. With one eye on the sliding doors, he discreetly flicks through paperwork on her desk. He glides away from the desk as she suddenly reappears, wrapped in a brocaded velvet dressing gown.
I like that.
Thank you.
Where'd you get it?
Israel.
She goes into the bathroom. He searches her bookshelf.
What were you doing there?
I lived there for a while with my husband. If you can call it living. I was in the army half the time.
Oh, I see.
What's the matter? Are you anti-Semitic or something?
No. Only anti-husband.
I left him there. He's in the desert somewhere, making fish ponds.
Harry pulls a chest of drawers out, noting a concealed safe set into the wall behind.
If you need eyes, it's in the fridge.
Thank you. Do you take ice?
Yes, please.
He heads off towards the kitchen.
Ed, when I'm clean, I'll fix us up some dinner.
A complacent grin plays across Harry's lips. In daylight, Harry emerges from Samantha's flat. He wanders away, looking around him. In a huge hallway beneath vaulted Gothic staircases in carved stone, Harry stands seemingly taking directions from a uniformed man. Harry leaps through the open doorway of a constantly moving paternoster lift and grabs both handrails slightly gingerly as he ascends.
Inspector Reinhardt, do you find me physically attractive? Irresistible? I mean, if you saw me in the street, would you throw yourself at my feet?
Corporal Palmer.
Harry smiles inscrutably at the craggy plainclothes officer and hands him his fake passport.
Oh, yeah. I was told about Dove, but I didn't know it was you. I should have guessed. So crooked, they had to put you in intelligence.
It was my sex appeal, actually.
Who thinks you are irresistible?
She says her name is Samantha Steele.
It means nothing. I'll check if you like.
Aged about 24.
Present address.
24 Leitzensee-Ufer.
Leitzensee-Ufer.
She picked me up last night, and with my irresistible charm, I want to know why and who she's working for.
If I find anything, I'll let you know.
Thanks. Oh, by the way, is Otto Ruku still in business?
The housebreaker? Yes.
And out of jail?
This is a central police station, not an employment bureau for criminals.
Is he?
Yes, he is. Go home soon.
Hello?
Sam, this is Edna.
Good morning, darling.
I'm afraid I can't make lunch, but will you have dinner with me this evening?
Sounds lovely.
I thought you'd like that.
Will you pick me up? Here?
About eight?
Fine. Bye-bye.
Does he suspect you?
Why on earth should he?
Two men sit at Samantha's table. The speaker is the cabbie who was tailing Harry and Vulcan before. Nighttime. A cab pulls up outside Samantha's flat. Inside the flat, a man photographs the contents of the secret safe. Sam and Harry arrive at the door. As she searches for her keys, Harry rings her doorbell, alerting the man inside. The pair pass through into the lobby. They enter the flat. She pulls off her shoes and makes an exhausted face. She moves through into the main room and turns on the light.
Oh, no.
The entire flat is in utter chaos.
You've been burgled.
Samantha bustles through into the bedroom and picks up a jewel case from her wardrobe.
My pearls. They've gone.
Were they insured?
No. They were beautiful. They were my mother's.
Well, what about the rest of your jewelry?
It's all junk.
Is there anything else missing?
No. No.
That appears to be all.
Or maybe we scared him off.
Oh, look at the mess here. I'd like to get my hands on the pig who did this. Look at all this.
Guess what? We'll have a drink and then I'll help you clear up.
Harry disappears into the kitchen with the whiskey bottle. Samantha checks that he is safely out of the way and then crosses to the chest of drawers. She pulls it out and spins the combination lock. Appearing satisfied, she returns to the bedroom. Harry emerges with two glasses, glances around, and moves through to join her in the bedroom.
Here you are.
She smiles at him and moves across to embrace him. They kiss. In daylight once more, Harry emerges from Samantha's flat and ambles away down the path. Harry walks slowly down a hotel corridor and bends to open a door. Inside, there would appear to have been another burglary. Wardrobe and drawers are open. A briefcase yawns open on the bed. Harry assesses the situation. He checks inside the briefcase. Behind him, there is a man sitting half hidden in an armchair, his feet propped up on the coffee table. Harry pulls open the curtain, then turns, crossing the room slowly. The presence of the man in the chair is clearly no surprise to him. He waggles the man's feet to wake him.
Otto, real call. Wake up.
What have you been doing? I've been waiting for you for 3 hours.
Did she hire you to do me as well?
Me? It's an amateur job. The top drawer was open first.
Did you find anything?
She gets $300 a week from the discount bank in Geneva. She has a United States passport in the name of Samantha Steele, an Austrian passport in the name of Anna Stein, an Israeli passport in the name of Hannah Stahl, lists of men, names, addresses.
In the wall safe?
Yeah, in a diary. Names and addresses, how much money they've got, not one less than 1,000,000 marks.
Where's the diary?
But you told me not to take anything. I was photographing it when you rang.
Where's the film?
Where's my money?
Sell the pearls you stole.
What pearls? I took nothing, Harry. You told me not to.
Really, Otto?
On my honor, Harry.
Harry smiles, as if still not fully convinced, but nevertheless reaches into his pocket for a wad of cash.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Otto.
Anytime, Harry.
Harry is sleeping in the daytime. He puts on his glasses and slides over towards the phone.
Hello?
Kreutzmann will be in touch with you tonight.
Meet me at the Chez Nous at 11 o'clock.
The Chez what?
The Chez Nous. It's a nightclub.
Okay, see you.
A blue neon sign announces Cabaret Chez Nous. Harry pays off the cab as Sam examines the photo board outside. Passing through into the interior of the club, Harry is momentarily nonplussed at being greeted by a man in elaborate drag.
Guten Abend.
Samantha smirks. The pair move across to join Vulcan and his companion.
Johnny. Hello, Ed.
Samantha Steele. Johnny Vulcan.
Hello.
Very happy to meet you, Samantha. Edith, this is Edmund Dorff.
Hello. Hi. I'll just get rid of this.
As Sam goes to the cloakroom, Johnny laughs at the transvestite cabaret.
Weißen Käse auf Nabel und Knie, unter die Arme je eine Melone. Und was ganz besonders wichtig ist, zwischen die Beine eine Zitrone.
What'd you say?
He said, und mit dem einzig vernünftigen Prinzip, auch noch in der Ewigkeit, ich gebe an, ich gebe an, ich gebe an, habe ich euch erzählt von diesem Angeben. Gut aussehen, ich habe mir wieder, ich meine, jung und halte schon schlank meine Figur. Erst lege ich mich völlig entspannt. Zur Ruhe, dann lege ich von unten...
Telefon.
Auf die
Harry is led to the back bar by a man in restrained drag. Another cross-dresser polishes glasses behind the bar. Harry picks up the phone.
Hello, Dorf speaking. Hello? Hello?
Father's a man with a green carnation.
Harry looks across to see an oldish man in an overcoat.
Dankeschön.
The old man with the green carnation gets up from where he was sitting and makes for the door, pulling on a Homburg hat as he goes. Harry crosses back to Johnny.
We're on, Johnny. Keep some manser amused. Okay.
Guten Abend.
See you later, love.
Harry emerges from the club. The man with the green carnation stands at a discreet distance. He then moves off. Harry follows him down a side alley. The man leads him around a corner into another street. They are observed by the driver of a large black Mercedes, who starts the engine and slowly follows the pair down the road. It would seem to be the same driver as whisked the defecting pianist away after his escape in the crane bucket. Harry turns as a man gets out from the back of the car.
Mr. Dorf!
Harry crosses to the car and gets into the back, where sits another man. The man who summoned Harry into the car sucks on a cheroot and eyes him coldly. The other man stares out of the window.
Walken tells us you want to move a body, Mr. Dorf.
Correct.
Place of origin?
Dresden. But we can get him to East Berlin any time we like.
Dead or alive?
Alive.
Willing or unwilling?
Willing.
Conscious or unconscious?
Conscious.
Nationality?
Why don't you give me a form to fill in?
Who's your client?
That's our business.
That affects our price. How old is he?
65.
You've made a mistake, Mr. Dorf. If he's over 60, he can cross the wall legally. And you don't need us, unless he's being watched. That affects our price. £35,000, or $100,000. Half in advance, half on delivery.
You're joking. There's an appropriation of $60,000 for this job. Take it or leave it.
The negotiator catches the driver's eye in the rearview mirror. The driver nods assent. Harry observes this exchange.
Very well, 60, if you can give us a set of genuine documents answering to this description.
Why do you want these?
That's our business.
I'll have to check with London.
Do that.
Good night, Mr. Dorf.
Harry coolly turns towards the driver.
Good night, Mr. Kreutzmann.
The driver turns sharply.
Good night, Mr. Palmer.
Harry turns thoughtfully and walks back towards the blue neon of Chez Nous. Johnny Vulcan works in his office.
Come on, Harry, you'll miss your plane.
Forget it, Johnny. I've changed my mind. I'll leave tomorrow. I still don't trust that Russian comic. Find Stock and tell him we're moving him tonight.
Tonight?
I'm calling that Russian's bluff. He won't be there, and then perhaps Ross will stop wasting my time.
Where shall I tell him to meet you?
I know.
Harry stands waiting in the shadows of the colonnaded portico of number 59 Marx Engelsplatz, the ruined building in East Berlin where Stock had him arrested. He looks at his watch. Stepping out from the shadows, he catches sight of Stock's compact figure waiting further down the colonnade. He moves towards Stock.
There's been a hitch. It's off for tonight.
Off?
Sorry.
It was a trick. You do not believe me. You dare to play games? I'm being watched. You can't get us both killed.
I didn't think you'd show up.
It does not matter what you think. Your Colonel Ross will decide.
Good night. Admit I scared you, Russian.
Stock scowls as Harry saunters away into the darkness. In an office overlooking Trafalgar Square, Ross stands at the open window, throwing out handfuls of birdseed. Harry stands watching.
The pigeons never come, do they, sir?
God preserve us from the half-wits. Stock should have sent you to Siberia.
If he hadn't turned up, we would have saved £20,000.
Yes. I've read your T-105, Palmer. Entertaining, but slightly pornographic. The fact that you pick up a girl doesn't make her a spy.
It was she who picked me up, sir.
Well, you have to say that to get it on expenses, don't you, Palmer?
There is something else, sir.
Yes, what is it?
That £800 loan without interest to buy my own car.
Yes.
Yes, I want it, or yes, I can have it.
Yes, everything they say about you is true. Get out of here. Go back to Berlin.
Don't care much for Berlin, sir. You're liable to get your head shot off.
That's what you're paid for, isn't it, Palmer?
Yes, sir.
But if you're worried, send Babcock in with the chit and I'll give you a signature for a pistol.
Thank you very much, sir.
Harry leaves Ross's office and strolls along a corridor to a back room.
Babcock. He wants an armory chit. If he thinks I need a pistol, I need a coffin.
I'd be glad to give you one. Who is Samantha Steele?
T-105 is a confidential. Haven't you read the Official Secrets Act?
How was the weather in Berlin?
Cold. I can make it tonight.
Not tonight, you can't. You're going straight back to Berlin at 11 o'clock.
Good morning, Alice. 11 o'clock?
Yes. Tickets. Expenses. $60,000. For which you have to sign, Mr. Palmer.
They're still working on your photographs.
What about my request for documents?
I passed to HO. Mr. Hallam will see you in 20 minutes.
Right, thank you, Chico.
Alice, who has the look of a tea lady and sports a woodbine glued to her lower lip, glowers at Harry. Hallam tidies documents on shelves inside a wire mesh cage.
Come in.
Hallam?
Rock Hunter. Come in, dear boy. Here we are. Special import licenses. We call all requests for documents special import licenses.
Very quaint.
I'm very proud of these. Very hush-hush. They match your German's list to a T. He's very lucky. It wasn't easy. I seem to run short of cigarettes.
Do you want a French one?
No. Never mind. Well, where were we? Birth certificate of one Paul Louis Broom. Inoculation for smallpox? Do you read German?
No, but I do have a plane to catch.
I know you have a plane to catch. Certificate of graduation with academia, commission in the army, death certificate. We won't need that. Now, shall we resurrect him?
How long will that take?
Patience, dear boy. Now, to this dead Mr. Broom, we add one British passport, naturalized. Your client will know how to put in the photograph and the stamp. One driver's license, endorsed. One insurance policy, receipt for premium, diners, club credit card, current. And what have we got?
A new broom?
Quite correct.
I thought so.
Signature, please.
Harry signs while Hallam puts the Paul Louis Broom documents in an envelope.
Rock Hunter.
Hmm? Another little joke.
Yeah. Good day.
Passengers for British Open Airways Flight 684 to Berlin, who have already checked in, may now board the coach through
these. Chico runs through the airport clutching a manila envelope. Harry sits in the lounge.
You smoke too much, Chico. Come into my office.
Bloody things are still wet. Your German burglar photographed everything. That's why it took so long. Now, these are Samantha Steele's passports. Israeli, Austrian, American. Photostats of everything in her safe. And her diary.
Thank you, Round Robin.
Harry places the documents in his briefcase. He does a double take on noticing that one of the names in Samantha's diary is Paul Louis Broom, the same as Hallam has chosen.
How come you picked Paul Louis Broom's documents?
What an extraordinary question.
I said, how come?
I started at capital A, then capital A small a, and then AB, and then AC, and went on until I found what you needed. Sometimes you start at Z and work backwards, just for fun.
Are you sure this fella's dead?
Dead? Well, of course he's dead. His death certificate says so.
Sometimes we start with Z and work backwards, just for fun.
In Berlin once more, Samantha opens the door to Harry.
Oh, what a lovely surprise. I thought you were still in London.
I have a surprise for you, too.
Oh, am I glad you're back.
It's in here.
He opens his briefcase, permitting her to see the Paul Louis Broom envelope.
A present? Pearls?
To replace the ones that were stolen.
Are they real?
They cost a fortune.
Well, I'll take better care of these. By the way, darling.
Yeah?
Did your burglar find anything in my flat?
Nothing much. Did yours find anything in mine?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Your stuff was too innocuous, you know what I mean? It was too good to be true.
I'll have to put that in my next report.
What's your interest in Paul Louis Broom?
None at all. Who is he?
He's on our wanted list.
Whose wanted list?
Israeli intelligence.
Why is that?
Because very soon, German war criminals will no longer have to face trial.
Broom is dead.
Every night, some dead Nazi comes crawling out of the woodwork.
I see. It's the old eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth bit.
No. There's a lot of hard cash in Switzerland that they stole from the Jews. Israel is morally and legally entitled to that money. If we can stop people like Broom from getting there first, the Swiss have agreed to hand it over.
So you turn out to be a dedicated Zionist. A fanatic.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Will you give me those documents?
No.
What in God's name do you want them for?
Forget it, Sam. I can't give them to you.
Why not?
I came here to do a job.
I hope you're proud of it.
It's a living.
Your rotten job and your lousy few pounds a week. That's all you care about.
Her expression softens, and she crosses over to sit down next to him.
I'm explaining all this because I think I'm in love with you. But there are things more important to me than my personal feelings. Those Broom documents represent over $2 million to us. We want that money. We mean to get those papers, even if we have to kill you for them.
Harry holds her fervent gaze. Finally, she gets up and crosses over to the window.
Now get out.
Harry stands and calmly puts his coat on. At police headquarters once again.
Oh, by the way, is old Klaus Berger still alive?
The forger?
Yeah, the forger.
I'd like to run you out of Berlin, Palmer. You and MI5 and the Deuxième Bureau and the CIA and the rest of them. Then I can do my job instead of providing work for every forger, confidence man, thief and murderer in this town.
Oh, I agree. But is old man Klaus still alive?
The policeman, defeated, slumps in his chair and throws Harry a hangdog look. Beneath a tall, shiny office block, people skate on an outdoor rink. Harry walks side by side with Kreutzmann.
The money? And the documents?
You get those with the second payment, on delivery of my client.
As you wish. Is your client still in Dresden?
No. We moved him to East Berlin.
Ready to move at short notice?
Yes. But I must have approval of the details of your plan.
That's our business.
It's our money.
Meet me here tomorrow, same time. Up on the roof.
Harry Reilly watches him go. A grim expanse of the Berlin Wall. Kreutzmann lights a cigarette as he leans against a blistered brick wall covered in propaganda posters. Drawing on his cigarette, he moves off round a corner where he stops and shoots a look to the left and to the right. A blonde henchman falls in behind him as he heads through the backyard of a scruffy apartment block. Another blonde heavy standing nearby folds his newspaper and follows the pair up steps to the back door. In the grim stairwell of the flats, the three men move methodically upwards. They enter a flat where an old man sits alone at his table.
Wer sind Sie denn? Was wollen Sie denn von mir? Was haben Sie denn hier zu suchen? Was? Wer sind denn diese Leute hier? Ich bin doch ein armer Mann. Ich habe kein Geld. Von mir können Sie...
Kreutzmann looks on dispassionately as one of his sidekicks smothers the old man with a cushion. On the rooftop of the glittering office block, a huge Mercedes symbol revolves. Harry looks through a telescope. Kreutzmann approaches.
We've got what we wanted. The operation has begun.
Begun? My client hasn't approved.
He will. My plans never fail. And I personally will supervise. I shall be there from start to finish.
It starts in the east.
And I'll be there.
You can go to East Berlin?
It's only forbidden to West Berliners. I'm not a Berliner, I'm West German. What's your client's name?
Harry looks slightly uncomfortable and bends down to look through the telescope again.
That's our business.
Well, you'll contact your client and tell him he is to exactly follow these instructions.
Harry stands in Stock's apartment.
Ross agreed.
Of course.
You move tomorrow.
Yeah. You're joking again, English.
Not this time.
Who is doing the job?
Kreutzmann.
If there is a mistake, the Kripos will be shooting at me.
That'll be nice. You'll find out what it's like to be an East German.
You are insolent. Do you think this job, this loathsome wall, is all I've done for communism? Does Smolensk mean anything to you or Stalingrad? I look at your stupid face and I think you mean what you say. I like you, you're good at your job. You need only one thing.
What's that?
A reason for doing it.
I get paid.
£30 a week? Is it worth it? To be a tool of the generals? A tool for making trouble? Trouble makes arms, arms make money.
When you get to England, we'll give you a soapbox. You sure you want to defect tomorrow?
I told you I'm still a good communist. When a man leaves his wife, he remembers his wedding night. Communism was the love of my youth. And I've been faithful until now. I was with Antonov of Senku at the storming of the Winter Palace in 1917. You know what that means in Russia?
Yes, I think so. It means you're an expendable hero.
That is good.
Stock flops into an easy chair on the other side of the room, draws on his cigarette in its holder and turns to Harry.
If I don't like the plan, I won't come.
I think it should satisfy you. It's a very expensive funeral.
Harry smiles impishly at Stock. The body of the old man, suffocated by Kreutzmann's heavies, is brought in on a stretcher by two men in white coats to a room where stands an open, empty coffin. Several grey uniformed soldiers observe the proceedings, as do Kreutzmann's henchmen, who appear to be posing as undertakers. One of the orderlies hands a sheaf of paperwork to the guard, who then turns to the two civilians.
So, machen Sie weiter. Gehen wir.
One of Kreutzmann's men steps forward and kisses the dead man on the lips. The body is then closed into the coffin. The casket is carried up into the open air where a hearse awaits. Having stowed the coffin inside, the two orderlies shut the hearse doors and then go back inside. The hearse trundles over the cobbles of East Berlin. In the front seat sit one of Kreutzmann's heavies and the military escort. In the rear sits the other heavy. He raises a large spanner and whacks the head of the uniformed guard. The hearse careers down a side alley and draws up alongside an identical hearse. An arm extends from the driver's window and the package of documents is handed over. The second hearse now proceeds, while the first one drives into a side yard. More of Kreutzmann's people, the man with the cheroot and the negotiator from the earlier encounter with Harry, plus a woman, all in mourning dress, wait at one end of an iron bridge. Guards observe them through binoculars. The trio look up expectantly on hearing the sound of the engine. The hearse pulls up halfway across the bridge and the sheaf of paperwork is presented to the border guard.
Wer war das? Kennen Sie ihn?
Nie gesehen. Wir haben ihn vom Leichenschauhaus abgeholt.
A younger guard goes to the rear of the hearse and inspects the coffin through the window. The trio of mock mourners exchange anxious glances. The guard finally appears satisfied and returns to his commanding officer, who gives the all clear of the hearse to continue onwards. As the barrier is raised, Cheroot Man gives a smile. The woman suddenly erupts in floods of tears. Momentarily surprised, the negotiator then puts an arm reassuringly around her. The hearse pulls up in the final quarter section of the bridge before the last of the many barriers. The driver gets out, and with another man slides the coffin out from the back of the hearse. A more modern West German hearse awaits on the far side of the final barrier. The coffin is placed on the ground and the East German hearse backs away. The barrier is raised and the border guard turns to the supposed mourners.
Los! Jetzt könnt ihr kommen!
Both the men, assisted by two others, walk the distance to the now abandoned coffin sitting on the bridge. The two fake mourners, the hearse driver and a uniformed officer, come level with the coffin and prepare to carry it back with them. The bearers make the long trudge back across the western end of the bridge, all very serious-faced. They slide the coffin into the rear of the hearse. The woman, playing her part to the hilt, sobs as she lays her wreath on top of the casket. The doors slam shut. Johnny Vulcan and Harry Palmer loiter purposefully in a derelict building. Harry peers out through the smashed window panes to the chaos of rubble beyond. The hearse draws up underneath a railway bridge. The female fake mourner gets out and holds out her black-gloved hand. Cheroot Man counts out a wedge of cash and hands it to her. She takes it and leaves without a word, swinging her handbag gaily. The hearse drives off. Samantha's accomplice, the cabbie, drives along. The hearse pulls into the derelict site where Vulcan and Harry are waiting. The occupants of the hearse get out and line up.
Final payment.
He might suffocate while you're counting it. Get him out.
Los.
They comply. Cheroot Man tosses the wreath carelessly to one side. They ask Johnny to take a corner.
Hier muss mal einer mit anfassen, das ist ein schwerer Brocken.
Dahin.
They carry the coffin into the building. The driver returns to the hearse under Harry's piercing gaze. The negotiator sets about unscrewing the lid.
He's pretty quiet in there, isn't he?
He's all right.
We know our business.
You're working yourself to death, Harry.
Yeah, well, I'm paying.
The negotiator sets to undoing the final screw.
In order. Come, Fazan.
They remove the lid, revealing Kreutzmann's bloodied corpse. They all stare in disbelief, except Harry, who simply stares. The negotiator turns on him angrily, only to find Harry has his gun drawn.
You bastard, you! You double-crossing English bastard. We'll kill you for this.
Yes, well, some other time.
You planned this with Stock, huh?
Of course it was a plan, but it was Stock's alone. He wanted Kreutzmann, and he won. The rest of us are losers. Cover the driver, Johnny. Now get him out of here, you two. Come on. Come on!
Look out, Harry!
Johnny, who has grabbed a heavy spanner ostensibly to take care of the driver, coshes Harry with it. The others look on amazed. Johnny rifles through Harry's pockets. Meanwhile, the other two stealthily retrieve their guns. As Johnny unwraps a bundle of papers, he finds they have him in their sights.
Wegwerfen.
Vulcan tosses to the floor two envelopes, one bearing the name Paul Louis Broom. The negotiator tosses the other envelope to Cheroot Man, who pulls out a wad of cash and counts it. He appears satisfied.
Alles da. Komm ab.
Kreutzmann's heavies dodge out at top speed, leap into the hearse and make off. Vulcan checks briefly on Harry and then moves to pick up the Paul Louis Broom documents.
Halt!
A young man trains a submachine gun on Johnny through the broken window panes. Samantha's accomplice, the cabbie, arrives at a trot, similarly armed. He surveys Kreutzmann's corpse.
Kreutzmann. What has he got to do with the Broom documents?
Ask him.
Samantha arrives in a car. She shoots a look at Vulcan, who glances down at Harry, who is slowly coming round. Samantha, however, only has eyes for the envelope of documents. She calmly gets out of the car and crosses to pick it up. She pulls out the contents and seems happy with what she sees. She crosses to Harry and looks down at him with some fondness and more than a trace of irony, then turns and gets back into the car. The cabbie jumps in too. She reverses out at speed and picks up the young gunman before speeding away.
The driver hit you before I could reach him.
I'm sorry, Harry.
You all right?
No. Do you still have some of that brandy?
Sure. Here. You won't need stitches.
Oh, good.
What are you going to tell London?
I don't know. Let's get out of here. I've got some fiction to write.
At Vulcan's office.
Palmer?
Yes?
Come with me. Both of you.
Where to?
We're going to the Villa Grunwald.
Oh, who's giving the party?
Ross stands at the window of a grand stateroom.
So you paid £20,000 for Otto Kreutzmann in a coffin.
Harry shifts somewhat uneasily.
Will you wait outside, please, gentlemen? You too, Vulcan.
Vulcan and the three other men in attendance leave Ross and Palmer alone together in the opulent room.
Did they come all this way to interrogate Stock, sir?
£20,000 down the drain.
You know, I almost saved 10 and the broom documents, except...
Broom documents? Not Paul Louis Broom.
There you are. You're doing it again, sir. Not telling me.
What is there to tell? He didn't have his name in a T-105.
It didn't seem important then, did it, sir? Colonel Ross?
What?
I believe that Vulcan is connected with this man Broom.
Brilliant, Palmer. Vulcan is this man, Paul Louis Broom. Why do you think I had so much confidence in him?
Blackmail, sir?
Broom was a guard at Belsen. In 1944, he killed a resistance worker named Johnny Vulcan and took his identity.
Under his own name, he'd be tried and shot. Do you mean that Her Majesty's government employs ex-Nazis, sir?
And thieves, Palmer. Now, where are those documents?
They've gone, sir.
They've gone, sir.
Yes, sir.
Well, if they have gone, Palmer, that means I have no hold over Vulcan. And I can't let him go to the highest bidder. Now, can I?
No, sir.
Well, you've bungled the rest of it. Get rid of him.
Pardon?
Kill him.
I'm not killing anybody in cold blood.
Then provoke him, if that's going to satisfy your scruples.
Harry looks helplessly towards the door and then back towards Ross, who is ostentatiously ignoring him.
All right, Palmer, you've had your orders. Get on with it.
Harry swallows hard and stiffly turns and walks away. Ross observes through the open window as Harry crosses the courtyard to where Johnny Vulcan leans against his soft-topped American car. Harry gets in and Vulcan drives away. The enormous car drives along a straight, tree-lined road past an observation tower in a field.
What's the matter?
Nothing. Stop the car, Johnny.
Harry climbs out of the car and wanders in among the trees. Johnny follows him. Harry turns, produces a packet of French cigarettes, offers them to Johnny and takes one himself. He produces a lighter.
I have orders to kill you.
Falcon stares at him.
Poor Louis Broom.
What are you going to do about it?
Nothing.
Ross has been blackmailing me all these years in the same way he blackmails you.
Not quite the same.
All I wanted was to get my identity back, get Ross out of my hair.
All you wanted was $2 million in a Swiss bank that you stole from the Jews.
My father had the money. If you'd had the choice, would you have been a guard in a concentration camp or be killed on the Russian front?
I'm not a judge at a war crimes trial. I don't want to know about it and I don't want to kill you. Ross will have this whole city closed by now. Can you get out of Berlin?
Don't worry about me.
I'm not worried about you. I just want you to disappear.
If the Jews hadn't fouled me up at the garage, everything would have worked out fine.
I'm not interested. Just think yourself lucky you're alive.
Harry climbs back into the passenger seat.
What are you going to say to Ross?
I'll worry about that tomorrow. Harry.
Thank you. I'll do the same for you someday.
Yes, and you might have to, when Ross decides I'm no use to him anymore.
A black cab pulls up outside the Hotel Amzo. Harry gets out, pays, and walks towards the hotel.
English!
Another cab pulls up. Stock beams out at Harry from the rear seat. He then gets out, still beaming.
What the hell are you doing in West Berlin?
Oh, official business. English, thank you. You've done a good day's work. The world is well rid of a fascist.
I hope you get another medal.
Oh, don't be a bad loser, English.
I feel the same way as you do about Kreutzmann, but why'd you have to drag me in it?
Only the English or the Americans would have hired a man like Kreutzmann. I invite you for lunch. I'm paying.
No, thanks. I'm busy.
What's the matter? You in trouble? Ross won't shoot you for failing once. It's not democratic.
Colonel Stock, if I need to defect...
English, you are welcome. If you need to get out in a hurry, ask Vulcan. He knows the way.
In Samantha's flat, the cabbie is opening the wall safe. He produces the Paul Louis Broom documents. He crosses to the table. The cabbie looks nervously towards the door and slips the documents back into the envelope. He produces a revolver and cocks it as he goes to the door. He opens the door a crack, and then more widely, revealing Johnny Vulcan.
Why didn't you characters tell me you were looking for Broom? I know all about him.
Vulcan breezes in. The cabbie gazes nervously at him. A primitive bust grimaces grotesquely from a glass cabinet. Vulcan walks through a large museum. He finally comes to the Far Eastern section. He joins a man who stands inspecting the artifacts. It is Hallam.
Reminds me of the head of my department. Eyes follow you everywhere. What took you so long?
The Jews grabbed the documents. I had to get them back. Why didn't you steal the bloody things in the first place?
My dear Broom, I've told you anything taken from Section 63 must be signed for. It may seem selfish of me, but if this doesn't work, I'd like to be back at my desk on Monday morning.
Kreutzmann is dead.
Oh? Who's getting his share?
Never mind that now.
I heard from Hoffman last night. The claim to my father's money is accepted, except for the proof of my identity. We can be in and out of Switzerland in 24 hours. What's the interest on $2 million over 20 years?
These are forgeries.
You're lying.
Show them to any Swiss banker and laugh in your face. Beautiful forgeries. But on the wrong paper.
But you give Palmer the real ones.
Of course, dear boy. And that shrewd little cockney still has them. Don't worry, I'll get them. After all, he doesn't suspect me.
Harry descends in a glass lift and goes across to the hotel reception desk.
Yes, Mr. Dawe. Could I have the envelope you're keeping for me, please?
Certainly, sir.
The receptionist opens a safe and pulls out an envelope marked Paul Louis Broom.
Thank you.
Welcome, sir.
Harry pulls up outside Samantha's flat in a black cab. He gets out, clutching a bunch of red roses. He arrives at the door of the flat to find it ajar. He pushes it open gingerly.
Sam? Samantha?
Harry steps into the main room and sees a body lying on the floor. He looks around. He then crosses over to the body, lays his bunch of flowers on the sofa hard by, and rolls the body gently over. It is the cabbie, who has been bludgeoned to death with a heavy candlestick. Harry rolls the body back onto its front. The other gunman is there, weapon drawn. Harry weighs up the situation and gets slowly to his feet, his bunch of roses in his hand. He raises his arms while the other man frisks him. The man pulls out the broom papers from Harry's pocket, spots the open safe and shoves him roughly as he comes to the inevitable yet false conclusion.
You killed him.
Why?
Because you wanted these documents, so you could share Broom's money. I told Samantha all along, you and Vulcan were working with Broom.
If I came for the documents, why did I bring these?
In the moment the man glances at the roses, Harry takes advantage. With minimal fuss, Harry leaves the other man slumped completely out cold across a side table. He looks about him warily, picks up the envelope, and leaves the flat. Nighttime. In his hotel room, Harry, fully clothed, sleeps on top of the unmade bed. Harry stirs, pulls out a small pistol, cocks it, and stashes it in his pocket.
Come in, Johnny.
Harry turns towards the door, registering surprise as in walks Hallam.
What are you doing here?
There's no need to be offensive. You're in very hot water, dear boy. I've just seen Ross. You tell me where you were. You've fallen right on your silly face. Serves you right. Of course, your department doesn't have to account for anything.
What do you want?
I have authority from Ross to retrieve the documents. I'm on my way home. I should put them in safekeeping. Where are they?
Harry looks at him blankly, but then gets up.
They're in here.
Harry ushers Hallam into the bathroom, and then wrestles him into an arm lock.
Where's Vulcan? Where's Vulcan?
leaving Berlin tonight. Let me go, please. It's very painful. He's going over the wall. Into the east.
Harry shoves Hallam away. The older man slumps against the bathtubs, looking up pathetically at Harry, who stares back at him without pity.
They were going to throw me out. Throw me out. After 25 years. What do you think of that, Mr. Palmer? As a security risk. I never even dreamt of betraying my trust. Till I heard they were going to throw me out. Those silly papers. They weren't even secret. They belonged to Broome anyhow.
You want to tell Russ that?
No.
If you help me, Hallam, I'll try to keep you out of jail.
Nighttime. Hallam and Harry Palmer emerge from the lobby of the Hotel Amzo. Samantha and the gunman observe as if in alarm from a parked car as Hallam shows Harry to his own white car. The pair get in and Hallam drives off. Samantha and the gunman follow at a distance.
What's Falcon's plan?
We were going over the wall tonight.
Both of you?
Yes. It's an escape route for Stock's agents. The Grippers know about it. From East Berlin, we can get to Czechoslovakia. From there to Switzerland.
Hallam swings a left across the busy boulevard. Harry eyes him coldly. A section of the Berlin Wall. Hallam pulls up in the lee of a large building and within sight of a brightly lit observation tower.
Where is he?
You go to that house. At the back there's a garden and another building. That's where he's waiting for me.
Harry hands him the envelope.
Give these to Vulcan. Tell him I believed your little story, and whatever you do, keep him talking. I'll be right behind you.
Hallam gets out of the car and walks at a measured pace towards the front door of the gaunt grey building. Harry follows suit and then stands silently on the pavement. Hallam goes inside. Harry follows slowly. He draws his gun as he nears the front door. As he crosses the threshold, he ducks behind a pillar to observe the arrival in the street of Samantha and her accomplice, the gunman, in the small black car. Hallam moves through to the rear of the building, still clutching the envelope. Harry follows. Hallam moves through the garden. He comes to an outcrop of ruined buildings.
Broome? Broome? Where are you? Broome? He fell for it. I've got the documents. Broome, where are you?
Harry comes through the garden and approaches the staircase up which Hallam has just gone. He glances around into the shadows. He then starts to climb the stairs. Arriving at the first landing, he stops and looks all around once again. He slips. Vulcan, in another part of the building, spins around on hearing the noise. Harry discovers that he has fallen right next to the dead body of Hallam, who lies, eyes grotesquely open, a kitchen knife sticking out of his chest. Vulcan pulls his pistol and moves stealthily towards the source of the sound. Samantha and her accomplice carrying his submachine gun approach the front of the house. He goes to the threshold, gesturing her to stay back. Vulcan prowls through the semi-darkness. Harry looks and listens intently. He carefully tucks his pistol beneath Hallam's lapel. Harry emerges into an open part of the building. From the shadows extends Vulcan's hand clutching the pistol.
I have a gun on you, Harry. Come here.
Harry follows Vulcan into a large ruined side room. Vulcan swings him round and starts to frisk him. He casts a suspicious look at Harry.
Where's your gun?
I haven't got one.
I came unarmed.
You're lying, Harry.
Why did you kill Hallam?
Don't pretend you're stupid, Harry.
Still in the sights of Vulcan's gun, Harry moves to the unglazed window, spotting the gunman below in the garden.
Hallam broke down and told Ross everything. Ross's men are down there now.
Vulcan moves doubtfully towards the window. In the time it takes him to cross, the gunman has slipped back indoors. Vulcan looks out.
It's a good try, Harry, but it won't work. Hallam brought me what I needed. And in 2 minutes, I'll be out of here and over the wall.
Vulcan's torch flash signal is returned from the observation post.
Hitting you on the head is getting to be...
Vulcan spots the shadowy figure below in the garden.
I told you, Johnny. Those are Ross's men!
Harry kicks Vulcan's gun from his hand, but Vulcan throws him to the floor and retrieves the weapon.
I'd like to use this on you right now.
I know you would.
Stand up.
The minute they see that fancy fur coat of yours, they'll shoot you down. You're dead, Johnny.
Not yet. Get up!
Harry gets slowly to his feet.
Ross's men won't shoot you, will they? Give me your coat.
Samantha moves warily through the garden. The ruined building stands starkly behind her. She spins round to find the gunman emerging from the undergrowth. They both shake their heads. Down the ruined staircase come the shadows of Harry and Vulcan. Harry appears at the top of the next flight down, now dressed in Vulcan's astrakhan coat, while Vulcan wears Harry's light mac. On ground level now, in the entranceway to the building, Vulcan shoves Harry behind a pillar and takes shelter himself.
We head for the wall, slowly.
The East German guards observe them through binoculars and now slide out a section of the wall. Vulcan pushes Harry.
Now move!
Harry moves forward with great reluctance, staring around him into the shadows of the garden. He peers carefully around the corner of the building. Harry then leaps agilely backwards through a window aperture. Samantha and her accomplice spin around. The guards close up the wall. Samantha spots Vulcan at a distance.
Stop!
Samantha stares at the small figure in the light mac, clearly believing it to be Harry.
Shoot!
Vulcan falls in the hail of machine gun bullets. Samantha and the gunman run to where he lies. She stares down in disbelief.
Paul Louis Brome.
Harry Palmer emerges from the shadows and looks compassionately down at Vulcan's bullet-riddled corpse. He tosses the astrakhan coat over the dead man's head and shoulders.
The documents are in his pocket.
Harry walks pointedly away, stops to don his glasses, and then turns his uncompromising gaze on Samantha. Her face tightens slightly in defiance. In Ross's London office.
And he was found at the foot of the wall. Another martyr killed, escaping to the west.
I thought Colonel Stock would appreciate that, sir.
You might make a professional yet, Palmer.
I'm glad you think so, sir.
That loan you wanted to buy a car, how much was it?
£800. Why?
Well, I think you've earned it.
No, thank you, sir. I'll walk.
Harry turns and walks out, closing the door behind him with almost mechanical stiffness. Ross ponders deeply for a moment, and then turns and looks upwards to where Nelson stands tall on top of his column. Beneath on the square, Harry, once again dressed in his favoured light mac, does just as he said he would and walks, away through the flocks of pigeons and people, blending into the bustle of the city. The end.